Good morning, everyone. I'm afraid we're one short of a quorum, so I can't officially convene the meeting or at least do anything, but I'm going to start the meeting since Commissioner Franz has another commitment and can't stay for the entire meeting today, so I want to make sure that everyone's got plenty of opportunity to ask them questions if they have some, and when we have one more member show up, we'll officially convene the meeting. Commissioner Franz, Budget Director Kelly, welcome back to the Committee on Ways and Means. We were reviewing the operating budget and other budget documents and the governor's proposal last week, and I know we didn't get finished, which is why we're going ahead today. And I know we had a few things left in terms of slides to look at, so can you proceed to take us through the rest of the slides, and people can ask questions as they come up, and then otherwise, once we're done, I know there's a bunch of other questions, too.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. Thank you for giving us an opportunity to come back this morning. I'd like to pick up on the slide that's showing up above. It's in your slide deck, too, showing the pie chart. One of the things that we wanted to talk about this morning, and we talked about some last week, was the governor's overall budget and the reason that the governor is proposing some new expenditures in some areas. We also wanted to make sure we put that in perspective. But clearly, you know, one of the situations where we are sitting in right now is a fairly stable financial situation. Many states are unfortunately not experiencing the same financial strength that we are. We're not immune. Minnesota's not immune from changes in international finances and global changes, or nor are we immune from what happens with the national economy, of course. But our economy is very diverse, and one of the reasons I think Minnesota does so well over the years is that we have such a diverse economy and that we have so many sectors of the economy. In fact, the Minnesota economy tends to mirror the U.S. economy, and therefore we have opportunities to have the overall strength of Minnesota's economy. We obviously have some sectors that are struggling in the agricultural area with the commodity prices the way that they are, and in the mining area or some industries where we are experiencing some difficulties, and also there are areas where the employment rate is not as low as we'd like to see. There are certain areas and certain groups of people who are not experiencing all the recovery that we would like to see them recover. So the governor's budget proposal is really designed to take some of these resources that we have and use them to invest in the right kinds of opportunities so that more Minnesotans can experience struggle a little bit with the cold, so more Minnesotans can experience the recovery as well. And the pie chart here shows that 90% of all JUMA fund and healthcare access fund spending support payments to schools, local governments, and individuals. Let me just walk through a couple of examples. We wanted to really illustrate how much of the funds that go through the Minnesota budget really flow directly to individuals and different institutions around the state of Minnesota. If you look at the first bucket on top there, the 46%, those are grants to nonprofits, aid to local governments, payments to individuals and healthcare providers, University of Minnesota, Minnesota State. You know, what happens here is 36% of the state funds are directly made in these payments. These include child care assistance grants that provide services to about 30,000 children in an average month. And there are about 100,000 Minnesota students who participate in the grant program. So that's one example of the flow of money directly to Minnesotans. The bottom part, the 30% aid to schools, 30% of the state funding, general fund and healthcare access fund spending goes to education, K-12 education, and also early childhood education. For example, funding for all-day kindergarten comes out of this particular part of the budget for about 63,000 students every year who are in kindergarten. So another example that the funds that flow through the state government go directly to our schools. And about 4%, you see the small slice there, about 4% of the state funds go directly to state institutions. For example, we have homes for veterans that serve veterans around the state, the 24/7 care, provide rehabilitation services, recreational therapy, and work therapy programs. We also have 174 direct care and treatment facilities that serve more than 12,000 Minnesotans a year. So yet another part of the overall budget that goes directly to providing services. The last 10% really make up the state operations that we talked about, where we have the courts, the constitutional offices, and the agency services. What we have here, for example, in the executive branch, we have such things as the support for the state bonding efforts. We also have money that goes to the public health labs and the ag lab that monitor the emergence of public health threats. We also fund the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension as another example, which partner with local law enforcement agencies. So we wanted to show this committee and the people where some of the expenditures go in state government. One of the things that we want to really make clear is we think that each one of these parts of this economic pie, or this budget pie, if you will, play an important part in serving Minnesotans. And any changes to these components, we really have to make sure that we're investing in the right locations and we're doing what we think can really help with other expenditures. I'm going to talk a little bit about the governor's big areas of expenditures, unless anyone has a question on this before we go to the budget priorities of the governor.
Before you go to that, Commissioner, let me just officially convene the meeting. Clerk will note the roll. There is a quorum. Members, we have the minutes of the January 31st meeting before us. Representative Carlson moves approval of the minutes. Are there any questions, additions, changes to the minutes? Seeing none, all in favor of approving the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. All right. I see no questions, so, wait a minute. Representative Kowalski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, can you tell me how close the numbers are for higher ed in the governor's budget compared to the request of the two systems?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the request came in, what the governor actually recommended funding was, we were to break it down into three areas, as you know, the $62 million for the state grant program, and also $150 million for the Minnesota State campuses, and $97 million for the University of Minnesota. Those did not meet the request by those institutions. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but they're a little bit below what the two institutions requested.
Yeah. Representative Pelosi.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner, can you tell me what the rationale was not to meet the full request?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, well, I think one of the things that is true in any budget is looking at the priorities and looking at the available resources. And although the governor believed that these requests were very important and represented serious requests on the part of institutions, it was simply a matter that we, based on other needs and other opportunities, we felt that was the amount of money we could expend in the budget.
Representative Pelosi.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner, did the two systems, after you came out with your budget, tell you there would be any consequences to not meeting those requests?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I do believe that there was some concern. I think the full request for Minnesota State, for example, included a tuition, being able to maintain tuition at the same level, and there was some concern whether they would be able to do that if we didn't meet their full request. And they were also concerned about some of the long-term sustainability programs. Minnesota State, as you know, put together a fairly comprehensive report about their long-term funding issues over time, and I think they recognized that the governor's limited funding would not meet all those needs. The University of Minnesota, on the other hand, never made any commitments one way or the other on whether tuition would remain the same, but they both felt that the governor's commitment would be helpful, but they didn't give, to me, at least I wasn't aware of any indication that this might not to be able to satisfy on their part.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner, yeah, I share your concerns about them not explaining consequences. I raise the same issue in higher ed. The issue of not meeting their requests, and that would have to be studied in the Higher Ed Finance Committee. But it is interesting that we do have record student debt, and we've had it for a number of years. And by record, I mean nationally. Compared to the national numbers, we're right at the top or near the top. And I would hope in the future, this isn't to you so much as to the two systems, I wish they would tell us in specificity what the consequences are of not meeting these budget requests, because if there is no consequence, then these are wants, as in a way you've articulated, and not needs. And I think there is a crying need here to address student debt. That's, you don't need to respond, it's just a statement.
I should mention, Representative Polsky, I am going to have the University of Minnesota and the Minnesota State System in here, I would guess sometime in the next month for a hearing. We've done that in the past, and I don't have a particular date yet, but for those who are interested in that topic, that is the plan, to have them in for a hearing here one of these weeks coming up. Representative Paulson.
Mr. Chair, I think that's a good idea. I would hope, though, what we don't get is a PowerPoint fluff presentation with a lot of color pictures and fonts about the size of a small battleship and perhaps a litany of panel discussions of students and professors and everything else. I would hope for once we get numbers. And if their budget addresses a need, then what is the need and what is the consequence of not addressing the need? That should be a relatively simple thing for them to do. And I don't need it couched in a video clip or colorful pictures or fonts that are so big they don't mean a thing. So if we could focus on the numbers, I'd appreciate it. Well, on the consequences.
We'll do our best, and I'll encourage members to ask questions if the materials don't provide what they feel they need. Representative Houseman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to follow up on Representative Pawlowski's questions, that's an invisible process. We don't see when the University of Minnesota comes and makes its case to the governor. Is it fair to ask you who comes? Do all the deans come, for example, to make their case for their portion of the budget, or who are the people making the pitch?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, one of the things that happens is we start, as you know, in the summer before, so last summer we began the budget process and analyzing agencies and asking them to put together the materials and the university and the Minnesota State system as well. And then in the fall we ask all agencies and the University of Minnesota, Minnesota State to come and present their change item request to MMB, where they do bring in a number of folks. I forget how many they brought the last time, but it was a fair good sized number, where they present. They break down and present the information about their request, and then I know that the University of Minnesota president and the chancellor for the Minnesota State make a direct request to the governor in a separate meeting. But we go through that process, put together the change item materials for the governor. He looks at that request in the context of all the budget requests, and then he does have a meeting with the two systems.
Representative Hillstrom, then Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, Minnesota continues to do better than the national average when it comes to unemployment levels. Why is that, and what do you have in the budget to continue that trend, in particular in specific areas where we are lacking?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think one of the key issues, as we've talked about the Minnesota economy, it is diverse and it is growing, and we continue to attract businesses to Minnesota, and Minnesota businesses continue to expand here. But one of the things that we see happening and the businesses are telling us is that in order for this to continue, we have a tightening labor market. And one of the concerns that a lot of businesses have is that their ability to attract and retain talented workers. Minnesota has a great reputation for a talented workforce, and all of us should be very proud of that. I think one of the things that for example, the governor's commitment to education, both early education, K-12 education, and now the higher education systems, his commitment there and training programs with the Minnesota State system, his commitment there to training and education is really geared toward making sure that we continue to provide talented people in the workforce, that the young people in Minnesota and the folks who are changing careers or are changing different ways that they work, we need to provide them with opportunities to make sure they all can participate in this workforce. I think we're going to see the competition just get more and more intense as the cross-nationally as well as internationally. And so it really is important, the governor believes, that we invest wisely and we're known for investing in education and training, but also the infrastructure, and that's why it's a little bit off the trail here, but the bonding project is another good example of why the governor believes strongly that we need a strong bonding project and we need a strong transportation bill to take care of our infrastructure so that our colleges and universities and schools really are top-notch and we attract all the talented people. But also, businesses want our infrastructure to work. They want the roads to work, the airports to work. They want the bridges and trains and transit. And as we look toward attracting young talent in the Twin Cities and in the regional area, transit is another important issue. So I really believe that when the governor put forward his proposal, it was really designed to make sure that Minnesota remained competitive. We in Minnesota are so fortunate, and we owe thanks to the people in Minnesota who work here, who grow businesses here, who go have their families here, go get education here. And his commitment really is in education, training, infrastructure, is to make sure that Minnesota is seen as a state that's on the move. And that, but also our financial stability is a big part of that, having balanced budgets, having a reserve, and making sure that the legislature and the governor work together every session to get the budget, or every biennial budget together, so that people, the businesses can see that we are a predictable state, that businesses get, business gets conducted here in a very straightforward way. So I'm sorry I'm a long-winded answer to your question, but a lot of these components really go toward ensuring that this economy continues to produce opportunities for people. But thank you.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is a question for you in follow-up to your letting us know that you're going to have folks from the U come to the committee, which I think is good. And I want to add one more to your list, and that is that I think it would be useful to hear from our hospitals and nursing homes from across the state of Minnesota. As we all know, in Congress, they're talking about bucketing Medicaid and privatizing Medicare. And we don't really know what that's going to do to the state's budget, but we can be, I think, very sure that it's going to impact places like center care and the hospitals and nursing homes, especially in greater Minnesota, and the jobs that they provide. And we're not talking about that very much here, and I think it would be important for us to understand the impact to the state's budget, but also to Minnesota's economy, to take a look at that issue before this session ends. And this seems like the perfect committee to do that, so I would just add that to your to-do list for consideration, so that we're not left with a great big hole in our budget when Congress acts to repeal but not replace the Affordable Care Act.
Representative Murphy, I have obviously many people who want to appear before the committee, and we're going to try to accommodate people's requests. I know Representative Carlson the other day requested that we do a better review of the price of government, which I think makes some sense. You know, I guess I would just say in regard to your question, let me take that under advisement. I mean, the whole health care issue is obviously an extremely big issue, and I think we're going to be in a situation where we have to react to what the federal government is doing at some point, but we don't yet know exactly what that is, and I've heard about, you know, potential block grants for Medicaid, but we don't know what's going to happen on that. I think we will likely have a day where we have someone here from the department to talk about medical assistance, since it is a very large spending program. Maybe those questions could be brought up at that time. Representative Murphy.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that's great. I would just say, you know, one more time to urge you to consider not just someone from the department, but people from our hospitals and nursing homes from across the state of Minnesota, because they will be the ones who bear the brunt, as will the residents in those communities. So I think it would be useful to make sure that they have a chance, an organized chance, to make that case.
Well, I guess I would just say again, Representative Murphy, I think if that in fact comes to pass, we will definitely need some hearings. I'm not sure, not knowing whether it's going to come to pass or not, if we should have people in to testify on the possibility that it might. But we'll see what we've got in terms of our time for our agenda. Representative Liebling, then Fabian.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I was actually going to remind Commissioner Franz that part of what makes Minnesota competitive also is what we do in health and human services. Because I've talked to many people in my area, high-level people, who could pick a job in any area of the country. And why do they come here? They take the job here because we have great services for people with disabilities, and they have a child with disabilities. Or they have an elderly parent who comes with them to take advantage of our much better situation for people who are elderly and need assistance. So that, too, is part of our competitiveness, and I think it's important for us to remember that. It also feeds into what Representative Murphy was just talking about. Mr. Chair, I think that rather than just waiting to see what the feds are going to do to us, we know they're going to do something. And if, you know, Republicans have been talking for years now about repealing the ACA, and we know that repeal of the ACA is going to take $2 billion a year out of Minnesota's economy, and is going to impact everything we do in health and human services, and indeed our entire economy. I believe that we should be doing a contingent budget. I think that we should be planning for what are we going to do when all that money is sucked out of Minnesota's economy by the Congress and the President. So I think this is like a boulder that is rolling downhill toward us, and we're just having our picnic on the sand, thinking that things are just the same as they've always been, and they're not. And unfortunately, the governor is in the position of just putting forward a budget according to the law, as Commissioner Franz told us before. But if we're really going to be about making sure that our citizens' lives are impacted the least possible, we really ought to be planning. Who knows when this is going to happen? You're right. I mean, we know Congress has voted about 60 times to repeal the ACA. Obviously, they had no plan. They were just doing it for show because they had absolutely no idea what else they wanted to do when they succeeded. Now they are in the position of actually doing something. They can't figure out what to do. And we are all in the position of not knowing how to conduct our business because of that. But I do think that it's pretty for sure that they're going to do something that's going to result in Minnesota having less money available for these important services for people, and we ought to be planning for that. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Well, Commissioner, to Representative Liebling's point, what is the governor's plan to react to what might happen in Washington, D.C.?
Mr. Chair, Representative, excellent question. I mean, one of the things that we went back to this general fund slide because I wanted to kind of put in context what we're dealing with here and the unknowns that we currently have. As you know, on the November forecast, state economist Laura Kambakidis talked a little bit about that unknown, the uncertainty of what's going to happen in the future, and how do you work that into a forecast that is designed not only to account for what kind of funds we currently are receiving, but also how to project that going forward. And as you know, Mr. Chair, sitting in on the Council of Economic Advisors just last week, that uncertainty hasn't lessened at all. But if you look at the expenditure line, if you look at the November forecast, the expenditure line of $44,585,000,000. So that is the biennial budget that was passed in 2015, and that is the forecast that changes. So obviously what's happened with the budget that was passed in 2015 is the forecast has looked at population growth. It's looked at increased costs in providing health care and other kinds of growth in the budget. So what we're seeing that what the governor has proposed here is adding $1.2 billion in expenditures. But to Representative Liebling's point and to your question, one of the things that we are examining and trying to decide what are the different variables and how do you sort of flow chart and logic chart out what may or may not happen before the February forecast. So the February forecast will be released on February 28th. We're in the middle of doing that work right now. And the difficulty and the questions that we have to wrestle with is what changes are going to occur and when. And we don't know a lot of those answers. And so as we both heard Chair Nybrock about on the Council of Economic Advisors, there's a high degree of uncertainty about what will the tax changes be, if any. What will the spending be in terms of a spending package? What was the name of the infrastructure package that the President talked about? What kind of changes might there occur in the health care area of the Affordable Care Act? Is it going to be repealed? Is it going to be replaced? And when? What's going to happen with trade barriers, trade changes? Are there going to be trade changes that will affect the trade around the world? Obviously, trade changes can have a pretty dramatic and quick effect on our economy. So I'm trying to tell you all how difficult this current forecast is going to be for us coming up. And what we are trying to do is trying to spell out and articulate what we think may happen and what it might be and what effect that would have on the budget. It's a very difficult process. It's, I think, the most difficult forecasting scenario certainly I've seen since being at MMB. But so we don't have a specific plan. What we're doing now is looking at how the changes, especially in the Affordable Care Act, might affect spending at DHS and in the counties. So in a long-winded answer, we're working on it.
Okay. I've got Representative Fabian and Carlson, and then Let Commissioner go on here with his presentation, Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, this goes back to the questions about what the governor has in his budget regarding trying to continue to grow and expand the economy. When I'm back home in northwest Minnesota and I talk to counties and cities and hospitals and schools and nursing homes and businesses, they tell me that they are going through so much in terms of regulations. We have so many regulations, and so many of them are duplicates from one agency to the next, and it impacts their ability to provide the basic services that they really would like to be able to provide. So just in kind of a nutshell here, I could go into a whole list of things with regards to taxes and regulations, and we could talk about fugitive dust, and we could talk about fish guts and all kinds of things that go on within the agencies that come before the committee that I'm chairing. Commissioner, specifically, tell me what reforms does the governor have in his budget that are going to get rid of duplication and overly burdensome regulations that not just businesses are facing, but cities and counties and hospitals?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair and Representative, you know, I think one of the key elements has been all along, early on in Governor Dayton's term, there was an agreement by both the legislature and the governor to try to make some changes in regulations in general, speed up the process of making regulations and review those regulations and make them as simple and straightforward as possible. But I think one of the things that the governor is really asking the agencies to do, and you have to remember that many of the requirements we have are actual federal requirements that we have to sort of figure out how to pass on and how to monitor. But I think his request has been really clear to all the commissioners and all the different agencies, is to make sure that what you're doing makes sense, that business, that you talk to businesses, you talk to people in the field about what they're doing, why, how does it affect their business, how can it be made more effective or more efficient. So that is been an ongoing project of the governor to make sure that happens. One of the things in the local government area, obviously the support of local government aid to cities and counties is designed to help them deal with some of those regulations and requirements that are not going to go away, that we have to work with. But I think Department of Human Services is a good example of an agency that has been committed to working with counties, in particular in the delivery of services, to make sure that those services make more sense. And I think one of the areas of reform has been in the child care assistance program, to make sure that program, some of the regulations there, allow families to stay on for longer periods of time rather than checking their monthly, making variation in some of their monthly incomes, because sometimes their monthly income might change one month and go back the next month, and it causes families to go on and off that process, which makes it burdensome for the counties. And so I think there are a number of areas that the different commissioners can talk to. I know in your area, in your committee, you particularly deal with some of those technical issues, but I think all the commissioners are willing and want to talk about making regulations as simple as we can.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just real quickly. So, Commissioner, and I appreciate the answer, but I don't get a lot of satisfaction out of it, but specifically, are there any programs or expenditures that we have been making in the past that you and working with the governor and the different agencies, you say, you know, that program just is not working anymore. We're spending $200,000, $2 million, $200 million. Are there any programs that you know of in the governor's budget that are no longer there that we've decided they just don't work?
Commissioner Franz.
Mr. Chair and Representative, I don't have that. Off the top of my head, I just don't have that available. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, I want to go back to education for a minute, and specifically the U of M. We all know that they have their three basic missions: extension, research, and education. And my question, Mr. Chairman, of the Commissioner is, do you know what the breakout there would be? In other words, with that $94 million, how much the university would use for research, how much they would use for education, and how much would be used for extension. And one of my concerns is, and it was alluded to earlier, the university now has become a high-cost institution. And I know you referenced $62 million, I think it was, going into financial aid. But quite frankly, years ago, I was the author of that model that's basically used. And it doesn't really reach into the middle class, however you define it. It helps low-income students. It helps students that would be from families of lower middle-class income. But the ones that are really getting the brunt of it are the students that come from families that are a little above, I think the number is something like $34,000 a year, and are not really high enough income where that doesn't create a huge problem where they have to rely on loans and so on. So the question I ask is that breakout, because that becomes crucial, how much is going into education of that 94 million, if you will, being that one of the big problem areas happens to be rising cost of attendance. We really shouldn't talk just tuition. It's really cost of attendance that drives much of that. And what we mean by that, that would be tuition, housing, books, transportation, and so on. So if you have a breakout of that, I would appreciate it.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the break is a $97 million proposal for the University of Minnesota, and $8 million of that, of the $97 million, was geared toward Minnesota Drive, which is part of the University of Minnesota's outreach program in, around greater Minnesota, and making sure that they develop some economic opportunities. Another $2.6 million is investing in student success to really make sure that some of those students that need special services or special attention get those. There's a $4 million request for investing in applied research for economic development, another specific program designed to take economic development and make it more along the applied research instead of just pure research. There's a $14 million request for health training restoration. This really deals with greater Minnesota in particular, providing training, nurses training, doctor training, and outreach for health professionals. And then there's a $68.2 million request for the core mission of the University of Minnesota. And beyond those details, I'm afraid I can't help you anymore.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Carlson.
Commissioner, when you say core mission, then would that be the three issue areas that I identified are the mission areas, extension, education, and research? That's where the $68 million goes. It's divided between those three activities?
Commissioner?
Because the other, these are very specific programs that you identified earlier to get down to the $68 million, Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner? Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't recall how the $68.2 million is allocated among those three areas.
Mr. Chairman, a question that I used to ask when I was, quite frankly, chair of the Education Division of Appropriations, when we would be dealing with the higher education systems, because that much of that predated merger, when we would look at the various budget items, a very basic question that we would ask is, what's the impact going to be on tuition or the cost of attendance? And that's why I think it's an important question. And now we're in a situation where, like I say, the U of M in particular has become high cost, and our community colleges are among the most expensive in the country. We've tried to address that in past sessions and, you know, things like tuition freezes and so on, but maybe if we could ask the university when they appear, whenever you have them scheduled, you said sometime in the next month, and Minsky, quite frankly, I'm just choosing to focus on the U this morning, if they can be prepared to answer that question, you know, under the governor's budget, what does that bottom line mean for the cost of attendance? And like I say, we do, our financial aid program does a very good job of reaching lower income students in both public and private colleges and universities, but does not reach these days very high into the to the middle class, and that's a concern I think we should all have.
Okay, we'll make sure we get that information. Okay, Commissioner, I had said we were going to go ahead. I know I've got some other people that want to ask questions, but let's have you go ahead a little further into your presentation here, because I know you've got to go in about a half hour. Is that right?
Mr. Chair, yes, thank you.
Okay.
What I'd like to do, just for a few minutes, and as the Chair mentioned, open it up for questions, is just briefly talk about the four major areas the Governor is proposing expenditures in, and talk just briefly about each one of those. So we'll go to jobs and economy first. You know, one of the things that we've talked about already this morning is trying to make sure that we have the right environment, the right opportunities for families and businesses to grow in Minnesota. That's one of the reasons the Governor has proposed some tax cuts for families in the area of the Child and Dependent Care Credit, the Working Family Credit. And I think one of the things, certainly some tax cuts for farmers in terms of property taxes. But the other thing clearly is the sustainable transportation funding. And as you know, the Governor's funding proposal is not a general fund budget item. It really is geared toward his desire to create a separate funding mechanism for the transportation needs over the next few years. And if I could just mention briefly, the Governor really has proposed that we should replace 1,700 miles of roads and over 235 bridges. He'd like to add an additional 500,000 additional hours of transit service in the greater Minnesota, which would meet 90% of the need in greater Minnesota. Fund additional transit and bus rapid transit. We'd like to fund 75 priority railway infrastructure projects to improve the safety of Minnesotans living near railways and alleviate traffic for businesses that are backed up for train delays. But the new funding for the road and bridge construction would be provided by his proposed 6.5% gross receipts sales tax on gasoline, and also bringing the current 1.25% tax base on vehicle registration fees to 1.5%. He would also propose raising car registration fees by $10. This would, but the Governor, as some of you have mentioned in your concerns, would also require that MnDOT would find savings of 15% of all new revenues as we go forward. So his overall budget for this 2018-2019 includes $1 billion of investment that we think would really be important for our transportation funding and transit system going forward. The last point I'll mention in this area is the statewide job creation economic opportunity. Many of you are aware of the Minnesota Investment Fund and the Job Creation Fund and the work that the opportunities that they provided to leverage private sector dollars. We believe we've been able to see a $77 million in state funding over the last several years generate over $3.1 billion in private investment. That's a 40-to-1 return on investment. And it's created over 10,000 really important and good jobs. So I think the final point I'll mention on this slide is just the Governor's also recommending a $60 million broadband statewide. The request is for $30 million in fiscal 18 and $30 million in fiscal 19. Just as a point of reference, in the fiscal 16, we were able to award about $34 million in broadband opportunities in that setting. In the education area, unless there are any questions on that before we can take questions as we go along, if that's okay, Mr. Chair, whatever.
Keep going.
Okay. In the education area, you know, the Governor's mentioned and been pretty clear about his investment in early education, wanting to increase the pre-K investment that we made last year, $25 million, wants to expand that and ask for $75 million to expand voluntary pre-K in Minnesota. But he's also calling for a significant, an $85 million investment in Child Care Assistance Program, or CCAP as we refer to it around the Capitol. This really will increase provider payments, helps remove red tape for families and providers, and really provide much more stable child care opportunities for people throughout Minnesota. He'd also like to include a $31 million investment for the Department of Health's highly effective home visiting program. This would be a major investment in this program that targets at-risk children and provides opportunities for those families to have the skills and support that they need to increase the success of those children. We know that this program helps reduce incarceration rates, improve school readiness, and supports children's health, really providing every kid and every family with an opportunity in Minnesota to succeed. And beyond, and in the area of K-12 education, as you know, the Governor's committee and the legislature has been very supportive over the years of making a new investment every year K-12 education. He proposed increasing the school aid formula by totally $480 million. That includes a 2% and 2% increase in the general education formula, some special education formula increases, as you know, which is a serious problem for many school districts, and also some pension aid. We've already talked about the University of Minnesota and Minnesota State. Let's go to the reform area and talk a little bit about what we'd like to do in this area to improve the operation of state government. Did you jump ahead? My slide driver is getting ahead of me. That's all right. That's okay. I've got a cold. I don't even notice where we are. So let's talk about the efficiencies. And a lot of you have mentioned this and talked to me personally and also in this committee about the need to make sure that we deliver effective services. And I can tell you that that every commissioner will come to you and explain what they're doing and what he or she is doing to make the agency more effective, more efficient, how they're saving money. And I think that's understandable that we need to run the state government as efficiently as we can. But some of the areas where we actually need to improve our services are really in the IT area. I just like to talk about cybersecurity and IT infrastructure for a moment. Commissioner Baden and General Nash are the two folks who are most knowledgeable about this area. But one of the things that we really have to do at MMB is we have to manage a $76 billion budget, an all-funds budget. And during that process, we have to issue payments to businesses who do business with the state. We give tax refunds to over 1.7 million taxpayers a year. We give college grants to over 100,000 students. We make payments to schools and local governments, as I mentioned earlier in that pie chart. So we really have about 300,000 daily transactions we process through the MMB, which are over 109 million transactions a year. So MMB, we're solely responsible for the financial and human resources system that we have. Our human resource system allows us to hire, pay, insure, and train employees. We process about 55,000 employee paychecks every 2 years. This includes the Minnesota State employees and the state government employees. We issued about 1.4 million paychecks just this last year. Now, if these IT systems were compromised from a security standpoint, we would find at risk over $14 billion in payments to cities, counties, nonprofit organizations that provide support for individuals. And we would also see a threat on the private data on employees, their dependents, on businesses that do business with the state, and individuals that receive support payments. So the governor's cybersecurity proposal is really based in two buckets. It's a total of $125 million proposal. $74 million of that would be to make the system update and safe and secure, and $51 million would be to update the infrastructure and the technology that we need in order for the Minnesota government to work at the speed of business, as we like to say. But I'd just like to mention just one of those. Under the governor's $74 million cybersecurity package, what I've been talking about at the Minnesota Management Budget is the SWIFT system, the statewide integrated financial tools. As I mentioned, we make payments to employees. We process federal forms, we process 70,000 W-2 forms just for calendar year 2016. We process about 4,000 purchase orders every week. We register and do business with over 300,000 businesses throughout the year. Now, we have not upgraded this system since we purchased it 5 years ago, and it will no longer be under support in January of 2018, which means if we have any concerns or problems with the system, we'll have to hire people on our own to fix the system or repair it. We believe we need to move that system and upgrade it so that we can provide the necessary backbone to the state's financial system. An example there of the governor's technology funding of $51 million is the Department of Education. They have an old mainframe for dispersing funding to school districts. This mainframe processes and sends out about $8.7 billion every year to around 635 school districts, charter schools and other schools, training schools. These twice-a-month payments pay teachers, they buy supplies, they provide school lunches, and they maintain the buildings. So in addition to the payment system that I talked about for employees, the Department of Education maintains data for about 864,000 students, over 130,000 staff. This system is so critical that if we were unable to provide this system, we're not sure how quickly we could get the payments out. This was built about 45 years ago in the 1970s, And as I mentioned last week, if anything dates back to about the time I graduated from high school and it's IT, then it's way too old, I guarantee you. But the governor and the speaker have talked about this IT proposal, and I see Representative Baker here is going to chair that commission or committee, and we look forward to working with the speaker and the House and the Senate on coming up with what are the smart IT investments we can make, how can we deliver services more effectively, more safely to Minnesotans to make a difference in their life. And I think we want to make sure that we partner with the legislature, and our goal is to make Minnesotans who use our services understand and feel the difference in what we do.
Mr. Chair.
I'm Representative Hilstrom. I've got Representative Hornstein ahead of you, and I'd like the Commissioner to finish his presentation, and then we'll go through questions.
And would you, Mr. Chair, I have just one more area, and that is the what we call the quality of life areas, where we really want to provide clean, safe, and healthy communities around the state. You know, part of this obviously involves the area of cleaner water, cleaner opportunities. We want our citizens to have clean water in their communities. The governor's capital budget, for example, provides $167 million for the PFA, the Public Facilities Authority, but I know the legislature is moving quickly on its own bill in that area, and we really support and commend the legislature for moving that quickly. But we really need to make sure that we step up and help communities with clean water opportunities. In the area of safer communities, the governor's budget makes commitments in the Department of Public Safety and the Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, but also the Department of Corrections. We are charged with holding about 10,000 individuals convicted of crimes, and we want to make sure that since most of these individuals are going to return to the community, that we do what we can to make sure that they return in a way that can help them become really supportive citizens and helping our communities thrive. So that's one of the areas the governor is proposing some additional changes, is to give more support, more funding for programs in the Department of Corrections. But there's also an urgent need that you will be seeing shortly. The Corrections Department must meet its constitutional requirements for providing health care to the people who are in prison, and that need is urgent. The governor's budget includes a $9.2 million deficiency request that we will be presenting to the legislature, and it really deals specifically with the rising health care costs that we believe are required to remedy this fiscal year. So with that, I would just like to close by saying the governor really believes that we've got some resources that are available now, and he's asking the legislature to work with him to find ways to invest those resources that help most Minnesotans or more Minnesotans enjoy the economic opportunities in the state of Minnesota, and also to enjoy the health benefits. So with that, I'll open it up for questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner. Representative Hornstein, you've been very patient. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Commissioner Franz, for your presentation. Commissioner, you had mentioned the transportation and infrastructure parts of the budget, and which I appreciated. I thought you did a very good job of articulating the importance of that. But do you have a specific figure on the number of jobs that will be created between the bonding and transportation proposals that the governor has, new jobs that would be created as a result of both of those initiatives?
Commissioner Franz.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't have the number for the transportation bill. The bonding goes about. I can see the page where that number is written on, and I can't bring it up right now. Obviously, the governor talks about the bonding bill as a jobs bill and the transportation. I think one of the things we've seen over time is that continuing to make investments in transportation is not just good for transportation, but those continuing investments keeps the workforce in across the state here and working here. Because one of the things, obviously, when you have these highs and lows in the construction industry, if there's a low point and things aren't being done, sometimes contractors will move or put their resources in other states or other locations. So one of the keys we think is a steady, ongoing commitment. That's why the governor's 10-year plan for transportation is designed, so that we can show the communities and the construction industry that Minnesota's committed to the long-term
on making sure that we have these projects that are ongoing. They do provide a lot of jobs, and I'm sorry, I just don't have that number at the top of my head.
Representative Hornstein. Well, thank you, and I think it would be helpful, I mean, you know, between the bonding bill where we not only have local roads and bridges, but, you know, water infrastructure projects and other things that we're constructing. And then, of course, in transportation, it's roads, bridges, township roads, small town cities are benefiting, then the public transportation piece. You know, between all of those, you know, getting a number and then, you know, the amount of economic activity that leverages. It would be very interesting, I think, to get those figures.
Well, thank you.
Okay. Commissioner, I've got some questions I'd like to ask before we get on to some of the others. I also have questions in some cases that have already asked questions today. And I guess I'm going to refer to the detail here that's in people's packets where it says Governor Dayton's 18-19 General Fund Budget Recommendations. And I guess my first question, Commissioner, is throughout this, as is normal, there are operating increases for different agencies. You know, if you look at the very first page down near the bottom underneath Commerce, you'll see operating budget adjustments recommended by the governor of $3.4 million increase in 18-19 and then tails of $4.1 million. If I go in under to page 6, I see implement the SEIU union contract increases. I see $47.9 million for 18-19, $54.8 million in the tails. I'm not sure why those are broken out separately as opposed to a, you know, particularly agency number. But I guess, Commissioner, is there a standard sort of percentage the governor is using with these, where with all the agencies he's saying, you know, everyone gets a, you know, average 3% increase, you know, we've determined that that's what the average should be, or is this something that's determined by each individual agency?
Mr. Chair, thank you. I actually meant to talk about that before I stopped talking, but thank you for that question. We have changed our approach this year. I mean, in the past, you may have recall in 2015, the budget had a 1.8% request in operating budgets across the agencies. And this last year, we decided to we wanted to go more in-depth, and we wanted each agency to prepare and analyze each agency's need for operating costs. This includes areas like lease increases, legal fee increases, health care costs for their employees or their health insurance costs, and salaries without any assumed increase in the rate. So the goal was, and each committee will come before every committee, each commissioner will come before every committee and explain how they arrived at their particular operating adjustment. So there is no across the board, and it's really determined on an agency-by-agency basis. And part of that was, in part, the governor wanted each commissioner to sit down and look through the operating budgets to see what could they do that was different, what could they repurpose some money, could they save some money and use that money in other ways. And so that's what some of the commissioners will talk about, how they were able to repurpose some of that money. So the operating budget is designed to be there for each commission or each small agency, but all the agencies, and that is the number that will be built up. There's really three components to that. There's the areas I just mentioned, compensation, and insurance, lease, legal costs, and then there's also a 1% inflation adjustment that we added on for all the agencies. And then in addition, there's some pension costs. So what we've also tried to do, as some of you may have looked through the proposal and seen that the governor's recommending some pension reform changes too, and those pension reform changes are reflected because we did recommend some increases in contributions by the employers. And those employer contributions are also on an agency-by-agency basis. So we can provide the overview, if you'd like, on terms of the overall operating adjustment budget, and we can break those. We have a schedule we can show and break that down for you. But you're right, every agency will come to you with a different number and explain why their number is what it is.
Well, I guess, Commissioner, I'd like to get that documentation, but I don't know that I want us get it right now and then dive into that. It'll take too much time. So let's get that documentation. But I guess a little related to that, can you tell me why it's specifically broken out underneath HHS that there's the implement the SEI union contract increases, whereas I look Everywhere else I see, like under corrections, for example, that's an area where usually there's, you know, some significant salary increases that are proposed, and it just says employee compensation and has the increases. Why is it specifically broken out like that in the governor's budget for SEIU?
Mr. Chair, also I do want to mention that the operating adjustment is designed to estimate what current service level would be in the next biennium. Without, and some agencies will come to you with some proposals to add new programs or do different things, but the operating adjustment is really designed to show the committees and the legislature what current service levels with those cost increases would mean for the biennium. In particular for DHS, they do have their own operating budget adjustment that's there as well. But this one was, we specifically put the SEIU contract costs there. That's traditionally where we put it, and we thought that was the best way to show, because most of those costs, if not all of them, relate through DHS.
Okay. And then, Commissioner, if I can go on to pick up on what you talked about with the offender health costs. So the one sort of deficiency request that I've heard is this $9.2 million health adjustment that you referenced. I mean, is that a deficiency request in the sense that you need that money now, or is that a deficiency request in the sense that it would be money for FY17 that you would like to be in the omnibus bill when that passes, but specifically allocated toward FY17?
Mr. Chair, we are recommending, and we would need that money in this fiscal year. We'd like to see the action on that deficiency request by April, before April 1st.
And what happens if there's not action by April 1st?
Well, Mr. Chair, the agency will be in a deficit funding situation for those health care costs. And, I mean, right now we are under contract to provide those costs, and we would have to, I'm not sure what we would do at that point. We'd have to find some way to alleviate the burden, but we believe that the contract and the obligation of the Corrections Department to provide those health care services really requires us to act in the next month or so.
And can you tell me what is the total of that line item in a biennium? I guess I'm trying to get a sense for how much we've overshot it and why are we seeing this now when, I mean, I know there's been a lot of discussion about, though, the cost of the new hepatitis drug and that sort of thing. I mean, why wasn't this foreseen last year when we budgeted for this?
Mr. Chair, I don't have the answer to that, but we'll get the answer for you in terms of what the overall budget item for 16-17 would be for this biennium and how much the $9.2 million is above and beyond that, and also the understanding of primarily these costs have increased so dramatically, and hepatitis C is one of those dramatic costs, but there are some other ones too, and I'll get that information for you.
Okay, thank you. And then I guess the next question I have, this might be of particular interest to Representative Pawlowski, the disaster account, you're asking for an additional $20 million in that. What, can you tell me what that was funded at for the last 2 years? And I understand, if I remember right from the detail, that there is still maybe $6 million or something that like that left in it. I mean, is the governor... It sounds like the governor is proposing to have it be a substantially larger amount than what it's been in the past. I guess, can you tell me what it was last time, and I guess why the governor wants it to be so much larger?
Mr. Chair.
Director Kelly.
I don't recall what the last funding level was. I can say that the governor is recommending something higher this fiscal year, for this next biennium, in part because we now have a state-only disaster provision in Chapter 12 and that we've been paying out additional funds under that provision as well. And so based on analysis and working with the Department of Public Safety and previous annual expenditures out of the disaster account, he's increasing his recommendation to $20 million for the next biennium.
And Representative Pawlowski, to that point.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chair. In 2014, we created, as a recommendation of the legislative auditor, Chapter 12B. Chapter 12B is a gubernatorial declaration of a disaster. Now, Chapter 12A is a presidential declaration of a disaster. They're similar, but they are not the same. If there is a disaster in Minnesota and it does not rate a presidential declaration, the governor then can step in and the governor will then declare a disaster, and 12B kicks in, and this is where the account was created under 12B. If we're not in session, there are certain things that have to happen to help the people who are hit by a disaster. The account then will allow those things to start almost immediately when the governor says there's a disaster, and the leadership of the House and Senate agree, and 13 agencies, all of the local units of government are involved, can then begin to report to us what is going to be the totality of the disaster, and they can start implementing that account. And because we have two levels of the account now, we could have almost simultaneously a presidential disaster and then in the same time a gubernatorial disaster, and we would not be in session. Now, the point of having 12B in the account is that when we do come into session, we would get a report. And, Mr. Chair, I believe we were the first to carry the bill, I think it was House File 164, at the beginning of 2015, that for the first time had a detailed list, and it was only a couple of pages long, of everything that the state owed as a result of our ability to not have a special session and still address a disaster. So that's the short answer. I could go on for a much longer time, but I don't think you need to. But I do think that in this case, because of the increased numbers of incidents that have occurred, that is proper to have that account and to have that account be accessible. But remember, the governor can't do it without having both the House and the Senate agree that the account has to be tapped.
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair and Representative, I do still have my slide deck from you, Representative Pulaski, explaining it. It was a great learning experience. I recommend it highly. But I think one of the things that, from my, while I've been in this particular chair, I've, with the leadership, have talked about making sure that we have the available funds necessary so we do not have to have a special session if there is a catastrophe or some kind of disaster that occurs.
And then, Commissioner, underneath the Health and Human Services area, I know there was a lot of discussion last year about the needs for more beds in the state dealing with people who have got psychological issues. We had a lot of discussion about that in the House File 2749 Supplemental Budget Conference Committee last year. What is the governor proposing in that area? I don't seem to see any additional money in here for Anoka, for example. I do see some additional money for St. Peter, but regarding that whole area, what is the governor proposing?
Mr. Chair, this, as you know, as you can see from the list, is a very complex and complicated area, and I simply don't have the wherewithal to recommend exactly where some of these programs are listed. I think Commissioner Piper, we do see some on the second page for the Minnesota, about midway down on page 6, the Minnesota Security Hospital Improvement and the Minnesota Sex Offender Program Reform and the MnSOC Sustainability. So those are some direct areas where we're asking for some additional funding for staffing levels for both security and for safety and treatment. But I think if you look at the top of page 6, you'll see the direct care and treatment. Those are clearly, those facilities are all around the state. I think I mentioned 125 of those facilities. So there are some more treatment opportunities there. Some of that obviously is both security in terms of the security system modernization, but also it does provide safety and treatment opportunities too.
Okay, and then Commissioner, I guess my final question, goes to the whole all funds area. You know, we spend a lot of time talking about the general fund budget. We don't always talk too much about the all funds budget, which includes federal money, but also things like the gas tax and other spending that is dedicated. And I guess the information I got in a consolidated fund statement chart from MMB showed that, I guess, for November, the base for 16-17 was $76.2 billion. In the November forecast for 18-19, it was $78.6 billion, but the governor's recommendation would be $82.75 billion, which is about a 8.7% increase over the base. And it seems to me, as I go through and talk to staff, that we have maybe something like $1 billion in new fees that would be part of that, incorporated into that, too. Do those numbers sound right, Commissioner or Director Kelly?
Mr. Chair, the 82.750 all funds budget for 18-19 is correct. About $1.2 billion of that is in the general fund. About $1.3 billion or $1.4 billion of that is in the transportation area with the governor's transportation plan. About $700 million of that is in the healthcare area, and the balance is in other funds. About $400 million of that is in the legacy funds that do not have a base appropriation. There's about $200 million of fees or so, I believe.
Okay. Yeah, I said $1 billion. I guess that would include other tax changes as well. The governor's got, and I'm not going to get into a lot of that unless people want to hear it, because that's a little bit more. I know there's going to be a hearing in taxes on it, but I know that the governor's proposing to change some tax issues. He styles it closing corporate tax loopholes, additional railroad taxation, and other things like that. That, I guess, would be part of that overall larger number.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks for that. I know you got to go pretty soon, Commissioner, but Representative Hillstrom, you've been patient. Let me recognize you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, I really want to talk about the cybersecurity piece. And one of the challenges that we know is that we see large companies that are having security attacks, and they are getting people's credit card numbers, PIN numbers, and other types of information. In the event that worst-case scenario here happened and the state had a cybersecurity attack, what types of information of residents and businesses would be available for the taking? Does that include business banking accounts, because we make those payments through transactions, people's Social Security numbers, their bank accounts that are employees or whoever gotten paid through as a vendor? Is that all of the information that would be available that you're attempting to protect with this expenditure, or am I missing some?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, no. You know, obviously we don't want to tick off too detailed of list of what's available for people to come after. But I do think, for example, let me give you an example of what happened in South Carolina back in 2012. Their Department of Revenue was hacked, and they had 3.7 million people who were impacted, about 79% of that state's population. They got Social Security numbers, credit and debit card numbers, and that particular breach. And getting to your point, Representative Hillstrom, that particular breach led those hackers into 44 other systems. So it's not just, let's say, for example, they hacked the Department of Revenue system. That, in turn, will give them access to many other systems. We do have files on a lot of businesses, and individuals do business with the state. And so, you know, once they get into our SWIFT system, we're not sure where they could go. The Office of Personnel Management, you may have heard of that in 2015, the federal government, that had 21.5 people that were affected by that, and that included, once again, Social Security data. It also included security clearance, because a lot of the folks in the OPM, Office of Personnel Management, are people who have security clearance. That they had about 5.6 million sets of fingerprints that were accessed through that particular database, because as part of your security clearance, you give the fingerprints. So that cost of trying to fix that, and by fixing it, they had to fix the system, but they also had to give people individual protection to help go back and monitor their identities. That cost over $130 million just for that one breach alone. So I try not to think about this too much. I let Commissioner Baden think about it, because he's the one who can lose sleep over this. But it's really kind of concerning what we have out there and what might be accessible. And so we're very concerned about that.
Thank you.
Representative Anderson S.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner France, just to piggyback on a couple of things that Chair Knobloch had mentioned, I'll be interested as well in the percent increases that each of the agencies are coming forward with, because I know in the last biennium with the 1.8%, when I asked the agencies, why are you asking for 1.8%, they always said, well, that's because that's what MMB told us to ask for. So I would be very interested in knowing the specifics of how they came to their numbers that they're going to be using for this year. But then also, you know, I was concerned with the fee piece, And looking at the numbers, I had staff kind of dig up some numbers for me here. We're talking about $250 million in fees, and then the added amount in the tax revenue, we're about anywhere from $500 million to $1 billion, depending upon who you talk to, of increases for taxpayers. And that's with us having a $1.4 billion budget surplus. So I'm going to ask again, as I did the last time, at what point do you not ask for more revenues from citizens, whether it's through fees or tax increases? Because if we have a surplus now and you're still asking for more revenue, is there ever an end to the appetite, or is this something that you're going to be asking for every biennium?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, well, on the fund area proportion, I think our estimate is that there were about $162 million in additional fees for 18 and 19, of which $65 million was for a railroad assessment for safety. We believe many of those funds for the fees are user-based fee systems. The Department of Natural Resources has a lot of them, but also the Department of Health, Department of Agriculture. There are many inspection fees that are based upon businesses paying for the cost of the inspection. So we believe that these fees need to be adjusted to reflect the cost of doing business in those areas. I think the whole idea of user fee, I mean, if you look at the governor's transportation proposal, it's very similar, and that is to request more people who use the highways to pay a more through the gasoline tax increase. But the goal isn't to increase whenever we can, whenever just because we can or propose it. The goal is to make sure that these funds really accurately reflect the usage of those folks who need those services and should, in fact, pay for those services. In the area of the corporate tax area, the changes there, Commissioner Bowery can obviously talk to you more in detail about that. But clearly part of that area was to make the level the playing field for businesses, to make sure that businesses have the same kind of corporate deductions. We're going to hear this debate on the national level. That is, how do you fairly and effectively have a tax base that doesn't have a lot of deductions or loopholes, whatever you want to call them, so you have the biggest, broadest possible base, and you keep the rate down as much as you can. So I think the theory there is to make sure that we don't let the tax system get eroded by new techniques or new tax credits, foreign tax credits, and make it unfair for other businesses in Minnesota. So it's one of fairness and level the playing field in that area. So the goal isn't just to raise fees or raise taxes. The goal is to make sure that our system is effective and fair.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, we're in, is it year seven in this administration, I think, right? Year seven. And there's yet to be a year where the governor has not proposed increasing taxes or fees on the citizens of Minnesota. And the concern that I have is in year seven, there still has not been any decline in the spending appetite with these revenues, that we're actually sending a message to any business here in the state of Minnesota that we're just going to keep squeezing out of you as a business and as a consumer. And I think the message that we're sending as a state is we don't want you to live here. And I have a real concern about what that does for the economy in Representative Fabian's district, what it does to the economy in my district that I represent, for any one of us in this room. And I would love it if we saw just once, especially given the fact that we have a $1.4 billion surplus, and at a minimum, you're asking for another $500 million in fees and tax increases to the citizens of Minnesota, that we would say we've got enough and we've got it covered. I just think that we're sending a bad message.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair and Representative, well, you know, in 2014 we had about almost $400 to $500 million tax bill in that year that was all a tax relief and tax deduction. In this particular bill, we have, I think it's about $130 million on reducing taxes for people with working families and providing child care credits. So I think the governor really is trying to make sure it's a balanced approach. We provide tax relief to those who need it the most, and we make sure that people pay their fair share. The governor's been really clear that he believes that the 2% increase in the top 2% in income earners has been one of those mechanisms that's helped us balance the budget and made the tax system more fair.
Commissioner, I want to be respectful of your time and remind you that it's 11:33, in fact. So I know you had to go now, I thought, although we're happy to ask you more questions.
Mr. Chair, I'm happy to concede my time to anybody in the audience or Budget Director. I do really need to go. I'm starting off the presentation at noon, so I sort of need to be there. But thank you for your accommodation.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you for sticking around, Budget Director Kelly. I know Representative Drazkowski's got a question, and then I've got Representative Murphy. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Budget Director Kelly. Can you review for us the increases that in taxes that the governor has for the sick tax? Can you review what happens to that in his budget and how much more we are going to extract from people who are seeking health care in order to continue to fund this huge and growing government we have?
Director Kelly.
Mr. Chair, Representative Drazkowski, the governor is proposing to extend the provider tax. So in current law, it sunsets at the end of December of 19, and he's proposing to repeal that sunset, and that will bring in about $999 million in the 2021 biennium.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks. So one billion in the next biennium, and then is it more than that in the next biennium?
Director Kelly.
Mr. Chair and Representative Drazkowski, we have not looked out into 2023, but the $1 billion is a three-year number, so I would expect it would be more than a billion in 2023.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we are going to tax people who are sick and extract another $1 or $1.5 billion over the next couple of bienniums, each of the next couple of bienniums from them, according to the governor's recommendations. I share Representative Anderson's concern. There is not a tax that the governor doesn't like, it appears, and he even wants to tax people who are sick and trying to get better. So it's really kind of frustrating, I think, for most Minnesotans, Budget Director Kelly. But last question is, and Representative, one of the other representatives brought up, as do defenders of big and growing and government-centric proposals, policies, and ideas, they seem to think that if we borrow money and spend it, we're going to create jobs. And the part that is forgotten, Budget Director Kelly, is that money is taken from other people. It's extracted from Minnesotans against their will, accumulated here in St. Paul, and the idea is that, oh, suddenly, voila, this money is going to create jobs. I suspect that the department has put together an analysis of how many jobs are killed when we borrow money and spend it here, other people's money in state government. What is the opportunity cost of those, quote, state-centric jobs as we extract the money originally from the job creators in this state, the hardworking people who could otherwise start their own business and create jobs but aren't because we're taxing them to death? Do you have an analysis of how many jobs we're killing per $1 billion of bonding proposals that the governor brings forward?
Director Kelly.
Mr. Chair, the assumptions in the governor's capital budget on the number of jobs that would be created were based on economic analysis of an infusion in the construction industry and the ramifications of that and how that spills over into other sectors of the economy. I'd be happy to dig that out and share that with you.
So, Representative Drazkowski.
So, Mr. Chair and Budget Director Kelly, does your department or does anybody in state government analyze how many jobs we're killing when we're taking this money away from people and businesses in the state of Minnesota? Is there an analysis like that, or do we just forget that?
Director Kelly.
Mr. Chair, we have not done that analysis.
Mr. Chair.
I guess that answers my question, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Okay. To that point, Representative Hillstrom?
Yes, Mr. Chair. So could you tell me if there was a job loss number as a result of that spending, wouldn't that show up as a negative number instead of a positive number when you do your job analysis?
Director Kelly.
Mr. Chair, I guess I would assume that the economic analysis about the what happens in the economy in terms of the ripple effect when you put money into a construction bill, a bonding bill the size of the governor's, that you create construction jobs and you increase earnings and people then use those dollars to spend on other activities, which then increases income on the part of businesses and others as they spend their resources. I would assume that that analysis has taken into account any impact that there may be by increased revenues people may pay. It's been some time since I've looked at it. I'd be happy to dig that out and share it with the committee.
Well, Director Kelly, I think, so are you saying that the analysis that's been done for the bonding bill pretty much just shows the additional jobs that are projected to be created as a result of that bill? But I would imagine any other effects, such as Representative Druskowski talks about, would be something that the state economist would be building into their budget forecast overall. Is that fair to say?
Mr. Chair, I'd have to consult with the state economist to determine what she builds into her forecast in that regard.
Okay. Representative Erdahl, did you have something to that point, Chair of the Capital Investment Committee?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, you know, the term jobs created by a bonding bill has always bothered me in the sense that we have construction industries that are there. They exist. The jobs are there. But in large part, many of them depend on bonding bills to put their workers to work. Director Kelly, I'd like you, if you could answer, how many jobs would be lost in Minnesota if we don't have adequate roads, if we don't have colleges, if we don't have water towers, if we don't have wastewater treatment systems?
Director Kelly.
Mr. Chair, I'm not an economist, and I tend not to play one in front of a committee. I don't think I can answer that question, but I'd be happy to talk with our state economist.
I didn't expect you to.
Okay. Representative Murphy.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I grew up in a really big family, which taught me to be really patient but also persistent, so I appreciate you calling on me again. I am wondering, and maybe you can't answer this question now, but the governor's proposing a pretty significant investment again in education. And a part of that is in early learning. The state decided to put $25 million into pre-K last session, and there was quite a demand for that money. And I'm wondering if you have members with you today that could help us quantify how many of the people who sought that funding did not get funded.
Director Kelly.
Mr. Chair and Representative Murphy, I do not have those numbers with me, but there was an excess. There was a demand for funding in excess of what there was capacity. And the governor's budget this time around increases the funding to try to meet that demand.
And Mr. Chair, thank you, Budget Director Kelly. And I would be really grateful if for the committee we could get that quantified for us as we consider this issue going forward. Thank you.
And Representative Murphy, thank you for being patient, but I am going through the list in order, except to the extent that people have a particular question about a particular topic that seems to be related. So please understand that I am doing that. Representative Liebling.
Well, thanks, Mr. Chair. I just can't resist getting into this really scintillating conversation. So, you know.
One.
Oh, probably lots of them. So trickle-down economics has been disproven over and over again. I know the right likes to say that government doesn't create jobs. In fact, government does create jobs because government funnels money into a lot of very important things and makes sure that there's fairness and makes sure that to the extent we can in Minnesota that people have money in their pockets because they maybe work on a construction project or You know, they have roads in their communities, which helps their economic development. Government has an extremely important role to play. And, you know, if we want to see the sort of the natural experiment that's going on represented, I won't even mention the name, but, you know, those of you who want to say, oh, cut, 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 and that'll be better for us, just look at Wisconsin, how well that's worked for their economy, and look at the red states. They are not doing better than we are. Cutting, cutting, cutting has not made their economies better. So, Representative Erdahl, I really appreciate your comment because we are not little house on the prairie anymore. We are very interdependent people. We have a lot of structures in our society that we depend on for our economy and to help our people continue to be more productive and smarter and to attract more people here. And all of those things are very important to our economy, even if we can't always quantify it exactly. But I know it's important to you, it's important to me to have opportunity all over the state. And that means water towers and colleges and roads and all of those things that we know our citizens count on to have a prosperous Minnesota that continues to outperform many of the states in the country. So thank you. I just wanted to make that comment, Mr. Chair.
Well, Director Kelly, we're going to try to make an economist out of you yet, it sounds like. I don't see Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of things real quickly. I like the conversation about water towers. I'm not sure how many people have had a water tower freeze in their district this winter, but I had one in my district, so I'm kind of having some questions about global warming. But anyway, Commissioner, Director Kelly, I have two questions. One would be with regards to in the Department of Natural Resources, I have some serious questions about their ability to budget. In the previous biennium, they came to the legislature and were granted funding to hire 9 additional new game wardens. In addition to the numbers that they had already, they asked for 9. We found out now when we're starting to go through the budget that they only hired 4. The reason being is they miscalculated the expenses that were needed or the costs that needed in terms of revenue to hire those 4. How is it possible that an agency can miss a budget number by such a large number? And now in this upcoming budget, they're asking for 22. Quite frankly, I just don't have much confidence in the agency to be able to manage the budget. And then on top of that, they came back last year and asked for a $3 million supplemental budget to address needs within parks and trails that they had miscalculated. Can you explain to me what agencies go through in terms of the budget process to come up with requests and then miss it by this much?
Director Kelly.
Mr. Chair and Representative Fabian, I think you would be best served by speaking directly with DNR on their budget estimates, but I can tell you that they do submit requests to MMB. We do review them, and we try to make sure that they're accurate to the extent that they provide us information to do the math that isn't accurate. Our math is not going to be accurate either. I do know that with parks and trails, it's an unending demand for services. I do know that as the legislature makes decisions about adding parks and trails to the systems, the legislature does not add operating dollars to maintain those trails. And so they will probably, as long as you are increasing the number of trails across the state, they will come back in and ask for operating increases as well to go along with that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just real quickly, I'm curious to know if the governor is proposing any sort of a formula change to two different funds that we see, LGA and the CASA fund, the County State Aid Highway Fund.
Director Kelly.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, I believe not, but I am not certain on that, and I'll have to check and get back to you.
And then just a quick follow-up on our question, Mr. Chair, if I may. I asked for, and you couldn't, Commissioner couldn't come up with a list, but I did ask about efficiencies and reforms and so forth, and they didn't know of them. Would you please make available to the committee any of the reforms that are being proposed in the governor's budget that actually will show us what programs may be being zeroed out because they're not working and those types of things? Thank you.
Director Kelly, I've got a couple of other questions, too. I know last biennium we put $52 million into an initiative to do a better job of dealing with children that are in foster care, making sure that we do our very best to make sure that we don't have any children that run into abusive situations that aren't reported, such as the one that we had up in Pope County. And I see there's another substantial increase in that area underneath HHS, $19.5 million in 18-19, $49 million in 2021. That would be over and beyond what we put in this last biennium. Do you have any information on what that is or what additional we're doing in there beyond this very significant increase that we put in last biennium?
Mr. Chair, I believe that the funding that you're referring to for the improvements to child protection and foster care have to do with payments to families. And not to the system itself, but I will need to review that proposal.
So do you know, as the governor, I know we did a rate increase to foster care families this last year. Is the governor proposing another one, do you know? Or to that point, Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if it's all of this number, but there isn't what another North Star proposal, which is to equalize the rates. Apparently, we did it for children above age six previously, and the governor wants to apply it to all children. So we're talking about having the rate payment be the same to adopt a child as to have the child in foster care, and in order to not disincentivize families from adopting those children. And I think that's what this is.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. Representative Dean.
I just have one other question, not to that, but
oh, okay. Sure, then I've got Representative Torkelson.
Oh, sorry. Just one question about the health care access fund, which always bothers me. The governor is proposing increasing taxes by resuscitating the SIP tax. However, we're not using that specifically funded for what the health care access fund was supposed to be used for. We're now diverting that and using it elsewhere. You know, I always liken it to the TV show Arrested Development. The Bluth family had the banana stand that they sold smoothies out of, and they filled it with money. And the Mr. Bluth's comment from jail was always, there's always money in the banana stand, meaning that his kids could always go and just take money out of the walls of this banana stand. And that's exactly how we treat the health care access fund, because it's completely separated from our budget. We pretend we don't spend it. It doesn't show up on our bottom line. But here we are. We're increasing it over $1 billion in taxes to spend out of that fund wherever we want. Don't you think it would be more honest to just get rid of the health care access fund if the governor wants to spend that money elsewhere and to just spend it, not as an economist, but just as a budget director who honestly wants to communicate with the citizens of the state of Minnesota? Don't you think that would be more honest?
Director Kelly.
Mr. Chair and Representative Dean, not having watched Arrested Development, the analogy is missed on me, but I would say the governor is using the Health Care Access Fund to spend on health care. And we have health care costs both in the general fund and the Health Care Access Fund, and about 4% of our MA expenditures had been paid for out of the Health Care Access Fund prior to the governor's recommendation, and he's increasing that to 10%. So the majority of our health care costs are being paid on the general fund, and the Health Care Access Fund is providing assistance to the general fund for medical assistance, but also for the Minnesota Care Program. So there's distinctions and there's similarities between the two.
And there's always money in the banana stand. All right, thanks.
Representative Thorson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Director Kelly. I apologize if you covered some of this ground. While I was absent, I didn't get here right on time today. I was out in southwest Minneapolis looking at some trails and routes and stuff like that. as you know, there's a lot of turmoil around transit right now, but there also seems to be this assumption that the state of Minnesota is on the hook for 50% of the operating costs of some of these many of these transit systems, even those that are just being imagined. Can you give me some enlightenment as to the governor's position on how we should approach this issue of transit operation funds?
Director Kelly.
Mr. Chair and Representative Torkelson, the governor's proposal is to increase a half-cent sales tax in the metro area to fund metro Met Council transit operations. I believe it's current law that says the state will pay for 50%. With a half-cent sales tax, that would allow us to reduce our general fund spending in Met Council's budget area for operations and to put it on the sales tax. He's also proposing in his transportation package to provide additional funding for transit in greater Minnesota.
Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, and that's all very interesting, but it's, you know, it seems like this assumption that the state is somehow responsible for these operating funds, even though if the CTIP dissolution proceeds, we will have no voice in which projects are given a green light to go forward. And I realize you're talking about the half cent, but if the half cent doesn't happen and we stick to the statute that says we need to provide 50% of the operational funds, do you think it's fair that the state be responsible for paying for operations of systems that they have no voice in the establishment of?
Director Kelly.
Mr. Chair, it would seem to me that the legislature has made a decision about how to fund transit here with all of your voices combined, and you've made the decision that the state should fund 50%.
And so, Director Kelly, I guess to that point, so right now it's in law and your understanding that, I mean, if we have 10 new light rail lines that various counties and entities decide to establish and pay for, that the state should be, under current law, on the hook for 50% of the cost of operating those 10 new light rail lines. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, it's been some time since I've looked at the specifics of that law, and I would need to go back to better answer that question if it's decisions that are made by the Met Council or who.
All right. Well, you know, if you could check on that and give us your opinion and get back to us, I'd appreciate it. I don't see any other questions from members. We're almost at the hour of noon. I do want to say that we have the complete three-volume, three-ring binder budget documents for the governor's budget available that my faithful L.A. has been spending all kinds of time assembling if people want them. If you are interested in that as opposed to just getting the materials online, which you can get at the MMB website, please see Gene Coddington and we'll get you a copy. With that, seeing no other business, meeting's adjourned.